on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Good evening, everybody, wherever you may be. Welcome along to another edition of the Orient Hour. And I'm joined in the studio by Karen Harrison and by Christian Wheeler. Karen, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Hello, everyone. Nice to be back.
Nice to see you too. And Christian, how are you?
Good, thank you. Evening all.
Good evening to you. And we're going to be joined live on the phone by Kent Teague. We've got a very technical setup here, as you may imagine. We've got a flashing light that goes off in the middle of my desk, and it means the phone's ringing. So as soon as that goes off, it means Kent's ringing in from America, and we'll go live to Dallas, Texas, and have a chat with Kent Teague for the first time in quite a long time, actually. And I think a lot of us have missed hearing his dulcet tone, so hopefully we put that right tonight. But also we would normally have Billy Herring here and talking about last night's match, etc. So what's going to happen is we're going to do the show tonight with Kent and have a little chat amongst ourselves afterwards, and this show will be uploaded for people to listen to. But also we're going to issue tonight an Orient Hour Extra, and that'll be the show that Billy Herring and Jamie Stripe recorded along with Orient Comic, chatting about the last couple of matches, etc. And you'll also hear from Dave Victor, Matt Hiscock and some Joby McEnough, and we'll issue that one later on this evening to be uploaded. I think Karen will do that for me, won't you, Karen?
Yeah, I'll do that when I get home.
Yeah, she's our technical advisor, and she gets all these things done behind the scenes. But while we wait for Kent to ring through, it's the talking point of football, obviously, and we'll probably come back to that later, is this attempt by the so-called Super Six. And what do you make of it all?
Well, there wouldn't be the top six that I would choose, if I'm honest.
I think it's great that the fans have got together and put a stop to it. I think that's needed in the bigger game. The only surprise for me was that it took so long to come out. I think these clubs have probably been, you know, thinking of doing something like this for a long, long time. And you know, I think it's just a sad indictment of football at the moment that a lot of, I'd say, supporters feel disenfranchised with their club and football as a whole. I think for a long time it's moved away from the working class person, and I think this just brought it to a head, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a hard one to swallow for everyone. I mean, it may well have gone tits up, for want of a better word, but it seems to be only I think it's only a temporary stay of execution. I'm sure they'll work their way around getting some sort of deal that suits them, don't you?
They want to do some Super League. I don't understand why they don't, you know, set up a brand new team and just, you know, go off and do something. Why do they have to rip the history out of these supposed top six clubs and, you know, pull them away from their communities?
We'll come back to it later, but Peter Gill, who used to be a coach at Orient and at Barnet, he made a point tonight. You know, he said that, you know, that all these clubs are in violation of Rule L9. And so, you know, he said, why not just deduct points from them? I mean, he said 15. I actually thought maybe 30, and what's a nice relegation fight? Because they've got the European court to say they're not outside the law, but the law's irrelevant on this. You join a league, you agree to abide by that league's findings, that league's rules. So if you step outside that, you're in violation of theirs, and they're within their rights to do what they want and deduct points, suspend you, whatever they want to do. So I think they'd have difficulty. They may feel that they're a massive powerhouse with a lot of money behind them and the threat of legal action to drag out and cost the league money to fight it, etc. But I think they'd lose. I think the bottom line here is if the league had a pair, they'd probably, you know, give them enough points deduction to watch a nice little relegation dogfight and entertain us all. I'd actually pay to watch that.
You look at how some of the teams, you know, like Arsenal, and have struggled this season. Anyway, you know, if they had 30 points less, you can imagine what that would be like.
Well, 30 points is not unusual. It's happened before, isn't it? Luton got 30 points. So there is a precedence that's been set within the game that 30 points has been taken off somebody before. So it's not unheard of. And personally, yeah, I mean, I'd be very pleased to... very pleased to see that. We're all eyes at the moment are on our flashing light to see if Kent's ringing through. But at the moment, the light stays down, so we hope he hasn't fallen asleep at the wheel. But let's have a look. He's not messaged me, so we're expecting that phone to ring at any second. But yes, I mean, what points deduction would you be looking at on that sort of thing, Christian? If at all.
Yeah, you know what? I think they've probably just breathed a massive sigh of relief that they haven't lost those so-called big hitters out of their league. So I think at this point of time, I don't think that they'll go down that route. And probably they're just happy to have not lost those clubs from the league and the fallout from that, because, as I say, I think that would have got really messy.
Right. Well, hopefully, by the magic of technology, we can say hello, good evening, or good afternoon in Texas to Kent Teague. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Andy. Great being here.
And nice to hear your dulcet tones.
Good man. Thank you very much.
That's it. We can hear you better now. Yeah. So,
very good.
In the studio, we've got Christian Wheeler, and we've got Karen Harrison. So I think you've know Karen, and you've spoken, I think, to Christian before, because he used to work around the corner to you, apparently.
Yeah, in Texas, yeah. For a company called Aperia Solutions, just around the corner from Kent's office.
Ah.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you.
There you
and,
go.
And Karen, always great speaking with you. And again, happy birthday.
Thank you.
There you go. Well, Kent, I mean, obviously the questions have been coming in. I don't know if you've kept an eye on the message board during today, but I think, first of all, they want to know what you've been doing with yourself, because they haven't heard from you.
Well, I've been very busy. I've had the opportunity to become re-engaged in a company very similar to the company that I sold in 2015. And so I've taken on a little bit more of an operating role this time. And so Nigel has moved out of being in an operating role and, you know, retiring from Dunkin' Donuts and that sort of thing. And now I'm back in the business game a little bit more. So that's kind of where I've been and what I've been up to.
Right. So you anything but not busy. That's the main thing.
It's a very bad idea for me to not be busy. Very bad idea.
Yeah, right. So let's go through some of the softer ball ones here. We've got Oh My God on the message board. Have you missed even the interaction with the fans, as we've certainly missed you?
I think that the interaction with the fans, with the staff, with the players, with the coaches, with, you know, Martin and Danny and Nigel and the board, the face-to-face interactions, I am suffering from not getting the chance to do that. And when I say suffering, I mean it. It is for me suffering not to be able to interact and be called, you know, crazy as a box of frogs, which Karen may have called me one time. And you know, so it's you know, that human interaction, that personal interaction with who I consider to be, you know, friends of mine and people that I share a love and a passion and an interest with, it's been very hard on me personally. And I miss it. I miss it dearly.
Have you had a date where you can sort of expect to make tracks and get over to the UK?
Right now, I've been vaccinated both. I've had both vaccine shots or jabs, and that happened on March the 1st. So I have an unofficial COVID passport, I guess you might say. And we are waiting on the UK government to make it to where, you know, foreigners can enter the country without going through a 10-day, quarantine protocol. And so as soon as that 10-day quarantine protocol is lifted, I will probably be in the UK within a week. So right now we're really just waiting on the government to say this is when it's safe, for, you know, whatever they're saying about when you can come back. So that's all we're waiting on.
Well, Red Dwarf has said hopefully the question of Kent Teague losing interest in Orient will be put to bed tonight. So am I wrong in saying you've actually acquired another British business? Am I way off?
I have. No, that is what we did. We bought a business not too far from Liverpool Street. And then we have, over the last year, we have expanded that business during COVID. We've expanded that business into 5 or 6 international locations. And so I've been very busy about that. I have not lost interest about Leighton Orient at all. But during the pandemic, it has definitely been more difficult for me to display my interest by not being, in the UK. Shall we say, pacing on the balcony. So again, it's not due to lack of interest. I've watched all the matches, or most of the matches on stream, and I continue to contribute WTF to the WhatsApp group that I'm a part of, and all of that same thing. So very much involved. In fact, today, this will be my third call that I'm on about Leighton Orient today.
Well, there you go. How many television screens have you gone through watching this stream this season?
My wife has helped me with anger management protocols, and so I haven't broken any screens. But for me, just as an overview, and I tend to not look at games individually, but I look at them in kind of concert. This year has been frustrating, specifically around where I think that we're going to attain some level of consistency, and we continue to be frustratingly inconsistent for me personally. And that's no reflection on the players, no reflection on the staff, no reflection on the coaches or anybody, but it's just that's what kind of gets me the most upset or causes me the most heartache, is when I don't see consistency. It seems like we play really well for a few games and then we don't. And then we come up against a really good team like we did yesterday. And, for me, we got measured yesterday and we fell short. And there's no other way of saying it. We simply fell short yesterday and we got measured. And it's unfortunate, and it's hard to watch when you have more belief in what we've done and what we're trying to accomplish than was displayed. But it's good to get measured, because you know what you've got to do, either the next 3 games or next season. So there's always a positive outcome to losing, but it doesn't make it any easier, and I certainly don't enjoy it.
So you're in agreement then, Kent, that it's the inconsistency that's probably cost us this playoff opportunity this season?
Yeah, I think it's inconsistency, and I hesitate to offer up any excuses that might be used, because I believe that all clubs go through phases where they have injuries or a number of injuries, or they go through phases where maybe the pitch is not perfect, or there are a lot of excuses that we give to each other, and we say to each other about why we may have lost or drawn, when in reality, and this, I take a lot of personal responsibility, and I believe that, we have to take responsibility for the outcomes, and that the outcomes are true and fair and just over the course of the season. So where we sit in the table, I think, is true and fair and just based on how we play. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we didn't do better this season, and I wish that we had, and I really had hoped that we would.
So Ken, off the back of that, obviously there's been a lot of talk about the playoffs, and you've mentioned Cambridge last night, and I think we had some discussions between us today that maybe Cambridge, Cheltenham and Forest Green aside, the quality of the league this season might not have been the same as last season. So when you sit down in the summer, if we don't make the playoff, which I think, you know, we can all say is going to be a bit of a very difficult for us to sneak
difficult.
In now, maybe yeah. through the back door. You know, as a yeah. business person that does, you know, appraisals and looks back at performance, do you think in the yeah. summer then that when you sit down with, you know, the senior management or the board, do you think we're going to look at this season as a missed opportunity?
There's two schools of thought here that I'm having. Number one is that we've already started the process of determining what we're going to try to accomplish this summer in advance of next season. So we're not reactively waiting until the end of the season to start to build lists of players that, you know, we want to take a look at and maybe go after. So that's something that we've done, you know, the last 4 years. This isn't anything new. Now, the very first season, of course, we didn't get the chance to do that. But, you know, the last three seasons, at the end of the season, before the end of the season, we've always started to make lists of players that we want to take a look at. We start to try to figure out what formation maybe that we want to play, because there are certain positions that require a different skill set if you're playing, say, the difference between a 4-3-3 and a 4-4-2, just as an example. I am not a football mastermind, so please don't take this as being anything more just basic on my part, but I do realize that we have to have some direction of travel in order to know the right fit type of player that we want. So we're looking very carefully at the list of players that we have now. We are in a fortunate situation where we've got a lot of players that are out of contract, so we have room in which to make a move if we want to from a more of a reconstruction perspective. So those conversations are ongoing, and we'll see where they go. As far as the missed opportunity line of thought, every year that we don't get promoted, I believe that we've missed an opportunity, or that we didn't give ourselves an appropriate chance to get promoted, except for the first year. We've tried to build the club to where we are in the playoffs 3 out of every 4 years to give ourselves that chance to get promoted, every 4 years. And so one way to look at it is that it's a missed opportunity because we're probably going to miss the playoffs. Another way to look at it is that every year since we took over the club, we have fortunately progressed in the table every year. So you go first year National League, some concerns about a relegation battle that we got ourselves out of. The next year we won the National League, which was sort of out of bounds of what we expected, but we took it and enjoyed it and reveled in it and loved it. You know, last year we had a COVID-shortened season, and we were below mid-table, pretty confident that we will finish above mid-table this year. So at all of the 4 years, we have progressed from where Voldemort or he who shall not be named, or Bocchetti, depending on what name you want to call him, left the club, the situation with the club in. So it is a missed opportunity that we didn't make the playoffs and we didn't give ourselves the chance to get a promotion. But once again, we've proven that we're making progress. I think at some point in this ownership, we will face the challenge where we have a year where we don't progress, or it is possible that we have a year where we don't progress, and then that's going to be the year where I think a lot of questions are going to be asked, and I can understand why they would be.
I mean, are you happy with the setup as it is, Kent, in the way that the club works? You know, the process that you've got there in place, the director of football, the fact that you've promoted from within, or you're looking to promote from within, a bit like Liverpool do, if you like, with their boot room. Are you happy with that setup, or are all things subject to revision in the summer and all things subject to change?
Well, all things are subject to adjustment or improvement, always. And so let me kind of go through that list, because that's a little bit of a laundry.
I'm trying
there,
to cover
Andy,
several questions.
Fine, right? am I happy about the club, Leighton Orient Football Club, and every area of the business? So let's just go through a few of them. Am I happy with the director of football position? I am very happy with the director of football position, and the reason is there is no it would have been very, very, very taxing and difficult on Nigel and I, as, you know, co-owners and, you know, the board, to have effectively operated the club without a director of football. Because the director of football, we had a meeting earlier today, the board had a meeting earlier today. As you can imagine, we had a meeting today after last night. But, you know, Martin goes through the list of all the things that are on his plate. And football is obviously on his plate, the first team. Then we've got the academy. We've got women's football. Then we've got club. We've got camps. We've got college programs. We've got staff. We've got contracts. We've got contracts with the staff, contracts with the players. There is a long, long list that goes along with being the director of football. And the reason that we have the director of football is very simple. What we want is whether their name is Steve or Justin or Ross or Joby or to be named or some future, there is a future, manager of Leighton Orient Football Club, because, you know, they do turn over. We want that individual, the head coach or the manager, we want them solely focused on the first team. And I don't want them to be focused on travel plans for the first team. I don't want them to be focused on necessarily the academy and the ins and outs, the daily runnings of the academy. I don't want them to be thinking about the ins and outs of women's football, camps or college programs or anything like that. So the director of football for us is a title that's a little bit interesting because we put so much into football and we put so much on the director of football's plate. Am I happy with the way that, the club is being run from a financial perspective and a commercial perspective? Very happy with that. The streaming numbers have been very strong this year, so our fans have turned up in numbers, even though they're not allowed to turn up, so to speak. And so we've been very pleased, and we are very thankful about our fans. The other thing is that, when you can't have fans in the stands commercially, it's a very bizarre world where you're trying to find sponsors and keep people engaged and that sort of thing. And it's a tough go. And so I think Danny and those guys have done a great job of taking care of that. From a first team perspective, and I will comment on the first team, obviously, I miss my interaction with the players. I miss my interaction with the coaches and the staff. I find it to be very difficult to not get the chance to, encourage them or to, give them a hug or, a cuddle or whatever it takes to help, try to help motivate them in certain ways. And I'm really happy about the process of selecting the first, you know, the first head coach or the manager. That process is not fixed in the sense that it's not automatic that we will hire from within, and it's not automatic that we will hire from without. We have had two coaches who had experience, who came with a CV. One of them worked, one of them didn't. And so we have a, you know, not a stellar success rate from there. We have had a couple of internal, well, I guess we had two externals that didn't work. And then we've had, you know, one internal that didn't work, Ross, and Joby is still being assessed. We are not fixated on the fact that someone has experience or not has experience. We are more fixated on someone who we believe can be a leader and that can, you know, do the job and make an impact and make a difference in where we sit in the table. And so that's what we're primarily focused on. And there are advantages and disadvantages to experienced coaches, and there are advantages and disadvantages to what people would call inexperienced or new, you know, head coaches. And so what you're doing is you're choosing a little bit of a kind of a personal preference and also a kind of a gut feel on, I think this is going to work, or we need to go in a different direction. And the decision has not been made about who the manager is going to be next year. So that decision is still in the process of being made.
Ken, can I ask you a further question off the back of that? So we've spoken about the director of football, and obviously that's always a conversation that sparks a probably 50-50 split on people of whether they're for or against that. Now, I'm a massive fan of American sports, was watching the baseball last night. You know, there's general managers in baseball, and I get the premise around a director of football. You know, both you and Nigel sit in the States. You know, even the day-to-day management of different time zones, etc., managing the club. But from a internal versus an external appointment from a manager, do you think the tag director of football rather than a general manager harms an experienced manager coming to join Leighton Orient? Because if that director of football truly has no influence on the management of the football club, is there a little crossover there? Would a simple change of title maybe help that? I don't know. I'm putting it to you whether, you know, having a director of football at a Division II level is going to harm the applications that you get, and then you're pushed into only employing people internally.
I am going to give you a hypothetical, which right. will drive our fan base insane. But if Jose Mourinho wanted, you know, Martin Ling's title to be general manager, Martin Ling's title would be general manager. So, you know, we can change the wording of what we call Martin. And I don't think Martin cares about what his title is, right? He knows what he's charged with, or he's, you know, the remit that he's given, I think, is the correct way to say it.
Yeah.
And so he understands the remit that he's given, and he's given a slightly modified remit if it's Joby versus if it's Justin, right? So the remit slightly adjusts, because if it's Joby, then Martin needs to become a mentor of sorts, right, in certain ways, in certain things. And if you have someone like Justin, who came to us under a director of football structure and thrived in that structure, quite honestly, and loved it. He absolutely loved the director of football because he didn't have to do all the administrative and all this other stuff. He could just focus on the first team. So it's one of those things where, you know, the remit of director of football and if needed, the title of director of football can be changed. Let me answer a different question that I think our fans have, and it's akin to what you just asked. Would we be willing to allow the new first team manager to bring in their own number one? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the past, when we brought in Justin, Ross was already in place as the number one or as the, you know, the coach. And we told, well, we can tell, we kind of asked Justin, would it be okay? And Justin was happy with Ross. In this particular round, the new first team head coach will get to bring in possibly their own, you know, assistant coach if they so desire. And so you can see that we are adjusting the way that we think about that hiring process and the criteria by which we're doing that. You know, we're thinking about allowing more latitude as we get more comfortable about understanding how, you know, maybe it would be improved to do it a different way, or at least we're open to that conversation.
So who would make that decision?
That's an example.
Yeah, would that be solely the new guy, or the you know, if it's Joby, it's Joby. If it's somebody else, it's somebody else. Would that be, we'll use Joby as he's in the seat at the moment. Would Joby be solely responsible for naming his assistant, or would that be Martin Ling's decision?
No, that would be Joby's decision.
Right.
I think
that's a really important thing.
Right. In the past, we would have told Joby who the assistant is, right? I mean, essentially, right? That's how we talked about it for the last 3 or 4 years, whereas that has been reevaluated at the board level.
Yeah.
Again, this is one of those adjustments to the remit for Martin.
Yeah, I think you've got to be applauded for that.
I was late, so I'll go another 15 or 20 minutes if you'll have me.
Oh, I was going to say, I know you're short of time. Okay, we'll be more than pleased, Kent. If you take up the whole show, we'll be delighted. But I will say, I think you and the board need applauding for that decision, because it's, to me, where a manager's head is on the block, and it's his head on the block every time, it's only right that he gets to really have the team around him that he wants, rather than being the victim who's executed every time. And you know, he's not had the full say on who he was working with. So
as is customary, Andy, I have overspoken my boundaries probably with Nigel and the board. But let me say this. The biggest proponent for that adjustment was one Martin Ling.
Good.
Just so you know.
Yeah, that's
it was Martin who said, this is what we should reconsider this. So just so y'all know, I mean, it was Martin that was highly in favor of that over the last few board meetings that we've had.
Well, I think, I know Christian wants to say something, but I think that's 100% correct from Martin, really, to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My only follow-up, Kent, probably last question for me is, I think most Leyton Orient fans are pretty proud of the history and the producing of, you know, homegrown players and managers. And obviously there's, in business and football, there's a lot of, I'd say, flaws for promoting within and looking within and a strength. But I think, to your point, Do you think that we're missing out on, you know, if we look at it from a business perspective, you know, you from a monetary perspective, it's always good to employ within. Obviously, you save money and, you know, you know that person and, you know, you got consistency. But also at the same time, you're sort of missing out on new ideas and freshness and different, maybe different personalities. So do you think there's, you know... there's a time and a place for, you know, a bit of a shake up.
I do, and I think part of the problem that we face here is when we're unhappy with what we chose last time, we want something different this next time, so it'll be better.
Right.
And that's not always the best case to engage in that type of thinking. So, you know, just because we had an experienced manager last time that did or didn't work, now, you know, because it did work, we're going to have an experienced manager next time. And if it were clearly a choice between experience and inexperience, then there would never be an inexperienced manager named that was successful anywhere in the leagues.
Sure.
But there are examples, both, of experienced managers making a difference and inexperienced managers making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So then what's the answer? Because the answer can't be both. The answer, we believe, is that you find someone who has the qualities that you're looking for, whether they're experienced or inexperienced, they have the qualities that you're looking for in how to be a leader and how to lead, you know, the first team and to do all the things that are necessary in that spot. And again, just like you mentioned, there are advantages and disadvantages to both experienced and inexperienced managers. So the sorting is not perfected by saying it's either experienced or inexperienced. It's got to be perfected on some other prism or some other balance. And we're trying to figure out what we think the best balance would be, you know, not experienced or inexperienced, but we call it fit. We want someone who fits, you know, within the organization and really makes a difference. And so it's not about experience. Listen, the last person, if I'm correct about this, tell me if I'm wrong, the last manager to get Clayton Orient promoted from League 2 to League 1 was?
Mr. Ling.
Director of football.
Correct. And so if we want an experienced manager, now I am being very facetious here, but if we want a manager who has clearly answered the bell and caused Leighton Orient to be promoted from League 2 to League 1, then shouldn't we be asking Martin Ling to be the manager? We are not, by the way, and that is not a conversation. I'm being facetious.
No.
Because this points to, and when Barry appointed Martin didn't have a clue what he was doing about being a manager. And so now I don't know the history, but I've been told by Martin that he wasn't as smart as he is now. So all I'm saying is that, you know, there's these interesting arguments, and you bring up these examples, and everybody doesn't like the example. So, you know, it's fun. So there's no perfect choice, and there's no perfect way. What you do in business, what I do in business, and what we do in life is we make the best choice we possibly can given the options that we have, and then we go out and we make it work. We make it work. And that's what we're going to continue to do at Leighton Orient. We're going to make the best choices that we can, and then we're going to have to go make it work.
I don't disagree with anything that you've just said, to be quite honest, Ken. I think there's a for and against for everything, but I'd say the only caveat to bringing up what, you know, the last manager is, you know, as you know, football and business doesn't stand still, and I think it's about...
About
progression, and
I'd say
probably 99% of supporters absolutely love Joby as a footballer. The discussion about the management comes in because of obviously again that experience versus inexperience,
sure.
And you know whether that current coaching staff all pretty new to the game in what they're doing, or, you know, off the pitch rather than on it. Maybe could do with some experience, fresh eyes from outside. So I think it's a great discussion that will rumble on, and you've made some valid points.
If I may ask you a question about Joby.
Yep.
Okay. Let's say, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it is possible. Let's say that Joby, during his time as interim manager, gets us into the playoffs and has almost a 2 point per game average, which is what it would take if he wins the next three games, if we win the next three games. Who knows? Maybe Joby will score 6 goals and in the next 3 games, and we'll go in the playoffs. But if we get to the playoffs and we win 3 straight, now I understand but if he does that, he would have a higher points per game than Justin. Now, how do you justify to someone who has clearly proven, I agree, in a short window, but how do you justify to someone who has produced the results you've asked for, which is get us into the playoffs and get greater than a certain points per game number? How do you justify to that person that because you're not experienced, you don't deserve the job? That's a very difficult conversation to have with people who are highly motivated, highly successful, highly driven, know what they're doing. Yes, Joby needs polish. Yes, Joby needs experience. Yes, Joby needs this. Yes, Joby needs that. Yes, Joby needs to, pick a number two, a very strong number two, maybe more of a mentor. Yet. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to make it work. But again, we're in a situation where, depending on what happens these next three games, we may have to have some very tough conversations at the board level. I believe that we will have to have very tough conversations at the board level, no matter what happens the next three games.
Regardless of those three games, you would make your decision, the same decision. That's what I would be thinking, gut instinct, that by now, whether we make those three games, whether we don't make those three games, you've got a good inkling of what you're going to do, or maybe in my mind, the board should have a good inkling. But with a mentor...
I wish I could tell you, Andy, that we have made decisions.
We
continue to wait.
Okay, but with a mentor, I mean, I think it was Christian and me speaking on our WhatsApp group, but I think Chris brought up the name Brian McDermott, who used to work with Joby at Reading, and that was a sort of ideal mentor person to bring in to work alongside him, perhaps even on a 12-month deal, to give that experience in there, and that person to turn to for that little bit of advice. Because if we're going with Joby, and who's to say, as you say, he's getting above the points per game that you set, you've got your total, and Ross fell below it and he got the bullet, and Joby's at the moment above it. As you said, it's not a personal decision, it's a very easy decision when you set a target. If someone doesn't make the target, that's that, and that's what you said to me, that when it's based like that, it's not an emotional decision, it's a purely that's the facts, that's a decision. With that in mind, if Joby's above the target and he wants the job, I can't speak for him, but it's just say he does want the job, that what Chris said to me, that someone like Brian McDermott, you went ding, I thought that's a wonderful name to throw into the ring. I mean, it really was. Karen.
And Brian McDermott as well is somebody that Joby's gone on record as saying is somebody that, was a big influence in his career, isn't he? So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one name, but it's a sort of person, that sort of ilk, if you like, that surely we should be looking at to bring in as a mentor and as that advisory position, Ken.
We are leaving no stone unturned in how to get Leighton Orient to League One.
Good.
Oh, let's be clear. The objective is to get Leighton Orient to League One. And we all know that's the objective. A lot of us believe that that is the appropriate right of Leighton Orient to be in League One. It's the appropriate place for us in the pyramid. there is a difference of opinion on should we already be there versus how long it's going to take us. But the objective is to get us to League One and to get us promoted. And so we are going through the process of literally not, we are looking under every rock and in every nook and cranny to try to make the best decision, for Leighton Orient. As far as the next first-team manager.
I'm going to try and squeeze in quickly a couple of questions in here because we know we're running out of time, and these people have been good enough to send in their questions. So whether we like them or not, it's only right that we try and ask them. Simple one, first of all, from Apple Wumbles, a very simple one. Will you be trusting your gut instincts going forward?
Always do. I think intuition is a very important attribute that we as human beings have. So I asked my wife to trust her instinct and marry me, and so that worked out okay for her, I think. I trust other people's gut reactions or instincts, and so sometimes you make an instinctual decision. It doesn't make sense necessarily completely logically, but it works out. Sometimes you make an instinctual decision, doesn't make any sense logically, and it's a complete failure, and you have to go make a new decision.
Yeah. I love it when someone, if I've got something I think negative of and they prove me wrong, I'm absolutely delighted that when somebody does that, I really am. I think, great.
I am.
Kent, this is from Kent, to Kent. With so many players out of contract and our policy of signing Division One ready players, is Kent confident that the transfer committee and the backroom will get the support they need to give promotion a really good go next season?
Yes, absolutely I am. And the reason is I know how many League Two players are out of contract, which is 75% of the League Two players are out of contract this season. And if I remember correctly, that number is almost the same in League One. So we have a very interesting opportunity because of COVID, because of the now everybody's trying to figure out the new SCMP rules. So I believe that we will be able to, put together a squad that will give us a pretty good chance, a fighting chance, so to speak, of being in the playoffs and getting promoted this next year.
Right, just try and squeeze a couple in
at
the
end. And we will commit the financial resources in order to do that.
That's good to know. Headman's Header, right? Yeah. What's this one? A bit on the harsh side, but do you keep an eye on how managers who failed to get the position at Orient are doing at their other clubs, especially those on a shoestring with promotion a distinct possibility? I think he's referring to Derek Adams there.
Yep. So we do keep an eye on former applicants to the Leighton Orient Football Club job, and not only keep an eye on them, but we keep an open dialogue in some cases with them. And we do that because, there are some of them that are wildly successful, and those are the ones that our fans tend to focus on, and there are some who are not as wildly successful, and those are the ones that the fans tend to not want to talk about. And so we do keep an eye. I mean, we are constantly in review of the decisions that we've made, and it could be that just in Derek's case, just as an example, it could be that Derek is a really good fit where he is, and he might not have fit as well at Leighton Orient, but we'll never know that because it sort of is what it is, but he has done very well, very happy for him. Yeah. And, that's just kind of how that works. But you can't, if the only criteria by which you judge, our first team manager, selection is by how well other people do at other clubs, and you're only picking the ones that did well, then we are always going to be viewed as failures.
Yeah. Right, Trevor Joel, I mean, this is probably just, I don't think this is one that could be afforded, but he wants to know why 51% of shares aren't made available to supporters. I guess cost would be, cost could be one of them, but...
We will be there is a process going on. We are very close to closing the next round of funding for the club. I expect that within the next 30 to 60 days, there will be pretty big announcements around the financial structuring of Lake Mourning Football Club. And, you know, the numbers that we're talking about, you know, it would be very difficult for fans to engage in that level of funding. I'm very familiar with the German model, which is 51% owned. I looked at purchasing a German side at one time, a long time ago. And so I'm very familiar with that funding model. And, you know, if there were a way to make it work at Lake Norient, that's one way to do it. I know at Portsmouth. At Portsmouth one time, there were 13 families that owned 51%. And so, yeah, there are a lot of different financial models out there that might work.
Yeah, I mean, Common Euros, one of the final ones, I think we'll call this one. Have you reduced your stake holding, and or are you going to do this in future?
I will wait to answer that question at the appropriate time. When the financials come out this next time.
Right, that's fair enough. And Christian, have you got anything left for Kent?
No, just to say thank you for your time. I think most of us miss your interaction. I think at the time of you joining the club, you reinvigorated the club and the fan base. So first time I've probably spoken to you in a while, so I'll thank you for that.
Karen?
Well, thank you too, and I miss it, no doubt.
I'd just like to say my family are well and send their love, and I'd like to send my love to your family too.
My family... was really excited about your birthday, and Chris and I happened to get the chance to send a message to Karen sending her happy birthday wishes, and so we were happy to do that, and so all Karen's family for us holds a special place in our heart, and Karen is an example, and her family is an example of the Lake North family for my family, and it's something that we desperately miss.
You're making me blush.
Very much. But what we're just saying here is this: Kent Teagan and his wife ringing up Karen to wish her happy birthday, and you've spoken at length with Christian here. I mean, myself have had dinner together, and I get all that, and then we get this problem come along this week from the Premier League clubs, and you can't get a bigger difference, can you? With the owner of a football club that engages with the fans to the level that you've done, and then you've got these big six, if you like, for want of a better word, wishing to disengage as far as I can from the average supporter. What's your view on that, Ken?
As you all can imagine, I have a very strong opinion about the Super League. My opinion is it's not about whether they want to engage or disengage with the fans. What to me they seem to indicate they want to do is they want to change the cultural norm around what is, the basis for playing in a certain league. And that is that there were reportedly 15 clubs who were not going to face promotion or relegation from that particular league. That is completely unacceptable. That may be acceptable in the United States. But this league is not in the United States, it's in Europe. And culturally, the European foundation of football is based on a promotion and relegation model, which we are very, very supportive of as a club. And so I think it was a mistake to suggest that there would be clubs who didn't face promotion and relegation for I don't care what reason. And I think that is the biggest mistake that they made. I don't think it was about fans. I think they struck at the heart of promotion and relegation and the way that culturally football has been structured in the United Kingdom, England, and Europe for the last 100 years. And that's not acceptable.
Ken, do you think that will reduce foreign investment going forward? Do you think that foreign...
No.
You don't?
No.
So I was just going to say
not at all. No, it won't. That will not. That does not deter foreign investors from investing in English clubs. In fact, some of us, American investors love promotion and relegation. Like it is fantastic. We love it as a cultural norm and, as a way of life. So from a football club perspective.
I'm thinking the backlash that those owners are going to get, because as I say, at present, just like yourself, they probably can't come to the ground. But I think Stephen Warnock was on the radio today saying that when the owners of United and Liverpool and even Man City turn up, they're gonna get a shock to the system.
It's nice to know that we've got some ethical American investors.
Yeah,
I'm not. Well, it's not. I appreciate what you're saying, Karen, but I don't view it as ethical. What I view it as culturally sensitive, in the sense that we have repeatedly said this, Nigel and I and Rich and the other American owners that are on the board and along with Matt and Marshall and everybody else, we're not trying to reinvent Leighton Orient Football Club from a cultural perspective. We're trying to enhance what Leighton Orient Football Club already is. There's nothing wrong with Leighton Orient Football Club. It's fine. It's a great and justifiably to be proud of club. And we don't have to change the rules of the game in order to make Leighton Orient Football Club better. What we need to do is we need to make Leighton Orient Football Club better so we win.
I've got to say, we're going to have to actually bail you out, my friend. And thank you very much for joining. But red light, green light, and off you jump. And have a great evening or afternoon. Thanks for your time, Kent. Go on.
Yeah, thank you very much. Up the O's, Andy.
And thanks, Kent. Take care, my friend. Bye-bye.
All right, bye all.
Well, that was Kent Teague. We're out of time. We'll leave you with Steve White and the Protest family. Good night, everyone.
It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. There's flats in every corner of the ground. You can get your kids in just £5. Get an Orient here. It's only a quid. Get a cup of tea, but there ain't no lids, cos it's an Upton Park. Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. We had an FA Cup 78. We had John Sitter, that is most irate. We were club reviver, but we don't care. We had Checker Shirtley and Tate's hair. I remember the moment that Lee Spill scored. I remember it's done on the message board. I remember the pleasure. I remember the pain. And I want to hear rocking all over the world again. This is St. Upton Park. It's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode. It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. This is St. Upton Park. It's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode. It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world.
On the hour, across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM News.